Minnesota Senate Energy, Utilities, Environment, and Climate Committee will please come to order. It's Wednesday, February 26th, 2025. It's 12:30 p.m. We are here in room 1150 of the Minnesota Senate building. A quorum is present. Thank you all for your patience. Today's agenda will include two confirmation hearings. We are going to hear these first with Commissioner Audrey Partridge and then Commissioner Wickwan Ham. The intention of the committee is to take a vote and make a recommendation with the consensus of the members. We'll do the testimony first, members, and then go to member questions for each candidate individually. Sound good? All right. With that, Commissioner Partridge, if you could come forward. Commissioner, thank you for taking some time to come here today. Looking forward to your testimony. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Chair Frentz, Vice Chair Zhang, Ranking Member Matthews, and members of the committee, my name is Audrey Partridge, and I was recently appointed to the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. I am here today seeking your recommendation for my confirmation. First and foremost, I want to thank you all for making time for me to be here today and for considering my confirmation. I also want to thank Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for appointing me to the commission and in doing so entrusting me with this incredible responsibility. I am both honored and humbled by this opportunity. Now, I'll start with a little bit about me and my background. Brace yourselves, I am not a born and raised Minnesotan. I first came to Minnesota to attend college here in St. Paul, and I never left. I have lived here in Minnesota now for 22 years, and every year I find new things to love about this state. I now live just north of the Twin Cities in Arden Hills with my wonderful husband Wyatt, who is here today, my daughter Winnie, who's 9, my son Wally, who's 7, and our new puppy Sam. I'm originally from Missouri. I was born in Kansas City, but I spent the majority of my childhood in the Ozarks. My mom is an architect, now retired, and when I was little, she worked for a large firm in Kansas City. At some point, she decided it was time for her to go out on her own and focus on what she loved most, designing homes. So in 1991, when I was 6 and my little brother was just an infant, my mom moved the whole family south from Kansas City to a town called Springfield, just a few miles from her parents. There, she started her own residential architectural firm, working out of a renovated tool shed in our backyard. In those early years, money was very tight. We never went hungry. My mom always found a way to scrape together dinner out of the last few cans in the pantry. But I watched my parents struggle and make difficult trade-offs. I remember one time when my dad lost his job and my mom's business was still very new. I watched my mom try to negotiate a payment plan so that I could keep taking gymnastics lessons. Unfortunately, it didn't work, so she had to take me out of lessons. And as is often the case, it was far more upsetting for her as a parent than it was for me as a kid. Only now, as a parent myself, do I understand why it was so heartbreaking for her to have to take something away from me because we couldn't afford it. Over time, my mom's business grew. She worked hard and she did great work. She never cut corners and she never said something couldn't be done. I remember my mom and my grandpa, a union carpenter turned residential general contractor, on so many occasions talking shop together, laughing at the idea that some other architect or builder told a client that what they wanted wasn't possible. For them, the idea that anything was impossible was absurd, and it showed either a total lack of creativity or effort. Anyway, my mom moved out of our tool shed into a real office, and her business continued to grow. That risk she took in 1991 and all of the financial stress and sacrifices paid off. And for me, it taught me things that stick with me today and that I apply to my own work. First of all, do it the hard way if it's the right way. Cutting corners will only undermine you later. Second, there is no place for pessimism or naysaying when it comes to solving big problems. And finally, there are moms like mine, families all over, making tough sacrifices, who may just be a couple cans of beans away from having dinner tonight. So increasing costs, even by just a little bit, have big impacts, much bigger than any stat or graph will ever show. Professionally, I've spent my entire career working in utility regulatory policy. Most recently, I worked for Center for Energy and Environment, a Minnesota-based clean energy nonprofit, where I led their advocacy work at the commission and here at the legislature. Before that, I worked for CenterPoint Energy in their regulatory department, working primarily on energy conservation. And prior to that, I worked for a group of utilities, electric utilities that is, both investor-owned and consumer-owned, supporting the CapEx 2020 transmission project. I fell into utility regulation a bit by accident, and to be honest, I didn't expect that it would be my professional calling. But very quickly, I realized the importance and the weight of this work. The work of the Commission is, of course, foundational to our economy, but also to every aspect of our society and people's lives. Our regulatory system, but the Commission more specifically, holds utility companies accountable to their customers, to the public interest, and to the state policy goals that you all create here. And throughout my career, I've come to the conclusion that utility regulation is not only essential for maintaining resource adequacy, reliability, and ensuring that everyone has access to and can afford essential energy service, but it is also one of our most effective and powerful tools for solving some of our greatest challenges. Whether that's addressing climate change, spurring economic development in rural communities, advancing equity of our energy system and our energy economy, or giving communities a voice in our energy future. Over the course of my career, I have come to care very deeply about this work. I have watched the Commission make critical decisions to advance our state's clean energy transition while maintaining affordability and reliability and supporting our workers and communities. As a member of the Commission, I will work every day to continue that good work. Now, right now, we are at a particularly critical time in our clean energy transition. Utilities across the country must rebuild aging infrastructure. Extreme weather events are stressing our energy systems and markets and require greater regional coordination. The pace of technological innovation and advancement is staggering, presenting new challenges for our traditional planning tools and timelines. Businesses and consumers are demanding carbon-free power from their utilities, and states across the country are implementing policies to accelerate the adoption of clean energy. At the same time, we expect historic increases in electricity consumption due largely to data center loads, but also to customer adoption of electric vehicles and other electric technologies. Here in Minnesota, you all have enacted some incredibly important energy policies in recent years, 100% clean electricity, the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act, the Natural Gas Innovation Act, permitting reform, and our new economy-wide net zero emissions goal. These policies provide a holistic framework and a vision for our energy future, but now it is up to the Commission to implement those policies and meet those goals amid all of these other challenges and factors without compromising reliability or affordability. I know we can do it, and I believe we can do it in a way that creates even more high-quality local jobs, that maintains affordability, especially for Minnesotans who are least able to bear the burden of rising utility bills, in a way that gives communities a voice in our energy decisions, and in partnership and through collaboration with our tribal governments. It's going to take a lot of hard work that is well underway thanks to the work of this committee, of the Commission, and of stakeholders and advocates who participate in our proceedings. I am ready to be part of that difficult work at the Commission. I believe my experience, my work with stakeholders and communities, and the knowledge I've built over my career, particularly in my work on the natural gas system through policies and programs like the Natural Gas Innovation Act, the ECO Act, and natural gas resource planning, my work with host communities, including communities like Becker, Cohasset, and the Prairie Island Indian community, and with power plant workers to understand and document the impact of power plants and our clean energy transition on our communities and workers. And finally, my experience and my work to expand and improve access to energy efficiency and assistance programs for low-income Minnesotans will allow me to support the Commission and the state to be successful at this pivotal point in time. Thank you so much for your time today and for considering me for this critical role. I'm happy to answer questions, and I do hope to earn your vote of support for my confirmation.
Thank you for your testimony, Commissioner Partridge. Members, like I said, let's go candidate by candidate. So questions for Commissioner Partridge first. I see Senator Grunhagen. Hi, Senator Grunhagen.
Well,
Senator Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair. Thanks for your testimony there, Audrey. And thanks for stopping at my office. We had a nice exchange. I won't try to go over that. And I know you said that you're going to keep your decisions, what your personal opinions are, out of your decisions, and you're simply going to apply state law. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Chair Frentz, Senator Grunhagen, yes, it is the role of the Commission of Commissioners to apply the laws that you all pass and the statutes that we have in place in Minnesota to the cases that come before us and the facts of the case.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you for that response. The only thing I'd say is I hope that I assume you're going to get confirmed, okay? Without my vote, probably. But we had testimony just the other meeting that 36% of Minnesotans can't or are struggling to pay their energy bills. That's over a third, and it's growing. And they said our energy costs are also growing at a rate that cannot be sustained based on the testimony from people who participate in this. So I would hope that when you apply the law and you testify before this committee, that you would at least tell us and inform us the ripple effect of decisions that we make here. For instance, I'll just give you one. You know, clean energy bill of 2040. I have talked to numerous co-ops, both in my district and also around the state. None of them believe that they can reach that. So that is going to put them in a position, if I understand correctly, where they're going to have to buy carbon credits for millions and millions of dollars. They're going to turn around and raise electricity rates on their people they provide electricity to in order to pay for this, because they won't be able to meet it under current, you know, there's just no way that they can see that this is going to be done with non-base load electricity. And there's very few off-ramps, as we discussed last session. So in your position, I hope that when you come to this committee, you will inform it of the ripple effect that we are having in terms of the cost of energy, especially on the lowest income in the state of Minnesota, because rising energy cost, electricity and otherwise, it increases the cost of all our products and services, and it especially makes low income and people on fixed income, mostly retirees, very difficult to meet their expenses. And again, I have over 1,000 customers in my insurance agency, and I've written out checks to elderly people who couldn't afford their prescriptions versus their electricity bill. And that I wish everybody here would sit in front of people, especially the elderly and the poor, and the anguish they experience in their life between deciding whether to buy a prescription, food, or pay their electricity bill. It's not fun, okay? And these are real people, and unfortunately, this state has taken a direction to continue to drive up energy costs faster than these people's income would go. The last thing I would President Trump got elected, right? And he signed executive orders, in his words, to get rid of the Green New Scam, which I've been waiting over 20 years for a president who would say that, okay, environmentally and every other way. So again, apply the law. I understand that. I believe you'll do that. But please come back to this committee and tell us the ripple effect and how it's, if we keep increasing this 36% to 40, 45, 50%, how are we going to print up enough money to help these people pay their electricity bills or their heating bills? And I mean, they're turning down the heat in below zero weather just to try to save money, putting blankets around them and everything else. And these people aren't taking vacations, okay? So think about that. And again, apply the law. I'm not disagreeing with you, but please help us understand the ripple effect of what we're doing, because I believe we're going in a completely wrong direction. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. Other member questions? Senator Matthews? Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being here today and for the discussion we had previously. So I want to ask you some of the questions we discussed to have it discussed here in our public forum as well, as well as some other questions. Do want to say that I did some background work. I got sent your research on the host communities that you did with your previous organization. So I tried to do some due diligence, checked in with some of the local folks that were in that report and others that I knew would have been involved in that study a few years ago. And I wanted their opinion as to how the interactions went with you from their perspective. And so I guess I'll put out there, we've got a lot of retirements that are coming down the pike, and just like to kind of throw out in a more open-ended general question what you see happening with the host communities, what needs to happen with the significant impacts they're taking, what you think the utility commission should be doing about that.
Thank you, Senator Matthews. Commissioner Partridge, host communities.
Yes, thank you, Chair Frenz and Senator Matthews. Great question. So as you mentioned, I worked very closely with six different communities in Minnesota who host large power plants, one of which being the city of Becker and the surrounding community. And I think one thing I'd say is that each city has a different sort of set of needs, I think. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all type of solution for the different host communities. But I think some of the things that are really important is that we ensure that utilities are providing transparency and, you know, giving communities early notice of any potential retirements. I think our planning processes in Minnesota really help to ensure that's happening. Through the resource planning process, the commission has been increasingly focused on ensuring that utilities are coordinating and providing information to the host communities specific to what they need. Just last week, we approved, I think, four different requests from the Coalition of Utility Cities in the Xcel Energy IRP that would help them to get the types of information and engagement from the utilities that will support them in their transition. I think additionally, the commission has really sent a message to the utilities that the commission expects utilities to be supporting their host communities through economic development efforts. And I think we've seen some of that take place in the city of Becker at the Sherco site, but also up in Cohasset. I know we've seen that happening around the Boswell site as well, to really work actively with the community to bring in businesses that can sort of fill that gap that will be left from the plant. I think another really important aspect is utilities working with the unions to make sure that they are supporting union workers to either find new jobs within the utility and providing them the support to transition over to those new jobs, or working with the unions to do other things to help workers who are maybe close to retirement but not quite at that point in their career And I think it's a lot of it is about coordination. A lot of it is about engaging and providing really proactive, transparent information and supporting communities and the unions throughout the process.
Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. I also wanted to ask about a couple other topics as well. You had some extensive work in natural gas work and research previously. You talked about that here today. What do you see as the role of gas in the near future here with the 100% law in place and as we move to 2040?
Great.
Commissioner Partridge.
Chair Friends, and then I almost called you Commissioner. I apologize, Senator Matthews. I'm giving you a new job. Just kidding. So I think the role of natural gas, you know, a lot of times people think of the electric system and the role of natural gas in our electric system. I think for quite a while we've seen that the role of natural gas in the electric system will increasingly be as a capacity resource. So we'll be using small amounts of it when we need natural gas to come on to meet our peak needs and to fill in when we have intermittency in our other resources. So that is an important tool. It can be used, you know, 5% at a 5% annual capacity factor and come on when we need it to support our other resources. It can be very cost effective. And so that's the role I see gas playing in the near future in our electric system. Now, in terms of the gas system itself, I think that from my perspective, I increasingly see natural gas as being more of a capacity fuel, even through our end uses, including our home heating and in our businesses. And so what I mean by that is that we are increasingly seeing an opportunity to move to dual fuel space heating, where we have a very efficient electric heat pump paired with natural gas backup. In those cases, it can be very cost effective and save people quite a bit of money to implement those dual fuel systems. And in doing so, it not only reduces emissions by as much as 90%, but it also keeps that gas backup, which is sort of that capacity backup role that we see natural gas playing on the electric system on a space heating basis as well. So increasingly, I think we'll see the electric system and the gas system be even more coordinated. And again, I think we'll see that gas system play that capacity role through our end uses rather than that high volume energy role it has played to date.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Matthews.
Follow up on the gas question, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I've dealt a little bit with gas plant proposals locally with Becker. You are probably familiar with that history there. It became difficult and a plan got pulled off the table. So I know it'll be a new commission. It's got new members now than it had then at the time. Do you see continued difficulties with trying to get gas plants even proposed at the commission and then go through and get approved? Or do you think that process is going to get easier if you're recognizing it's going to be a crucial component moving forward?
Commissioner Partridge.
Chair Friends, Senator Matthews, I think that's a difficult question to say whether it will be easier or more difficult. I wasn't at the commission, obviously, and I didn't play much of a role in the conversations around the Becker CC plant that you're referencing. What I will say is that last week we approved a gas CT for Xcel Energy through their resource plan at Lyon County. We also extended some PPAs for gas plants, so I expect we'll continue to get, CT, especially proposals at the commission. And like I said, they do play a critical role in meeting peak needs and filling in when we have intermittency in our other resources. They are the type of resource that's very agile and flexible and can be pretty close to dormant and then just ramped up when we need it. And so I consider those to be a pretty important near-term part of our electric system. The one we approved, the new one for Xcel Energy last week, has the ability to run at least partially on hydrogen, and they'll be doing some additional studies to see whether that plant could eventually run fully on hydrogen and then help to be compatible even more so with the 100% law.
Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Want to ask you about, we had a conversation a little bit about solar as well. Sherburne County is now going through, in lieu of the CC plant, we're putting thousands of acres into solar fields. And as I indicated to you, outside of landowners that are getting some big payments for that, it's being met with some pretty strong resistance from most of the rest of the community around Sherburne County. And right now, law is set in place where if they're building a small-sized solar, it does need to go through local approval. When you propose a big one, they get to leapfrog over local approval and go right to the PUC. So what role do you see the commission having to play with these larger solar projects? Seems like the vast majority of them are getting approved that are coming to the commission. And what are you going to do when you have this tension between a utility wanting one and a big majority of the local jurisdiction having some resistance to the siting in their area?
Commissioner Partridge.
Chair Friends and Senator Matthews, I appreciate you bringing that up with me yesterday, or no, not yesterday, I guess it was on Monday in our meeting, and I don't have a great answer for you. I've not participated quite a lot in the siting processes for solar installations. I know that we are increasingly seeing tension between property owners and landowners who see value in hosting renewable energy installations and communities that do not want those to be part of their landscape. So I think we're going to have to continue to be balancing those two interests and then the need for those resources. I know that we have some limitations. I think the executive secretary mentioned those to you as far as our authority over whether what we can consider and the decisions that we can make on those issues. But that's about the best answer I have for you, so I apologize for not having more.
Senator Matthews.
Final question I'll ask, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I've asked this of most of your colleagues as the circuit has been completed. I think I've sat down with each one of the members now and some more than once. I ask this same question even though I know it's a difficult and challenging one to answer, because pretty much everyone that comes to this testifier table will repeat the same mantra of wanting our energy to be clean, reliable, and affordable. Those are oft-used terms but rarely defined, especially the affordability term. And that's something that is very pertinent to what the commission does, because you decide whether a rate that a utility is coming to ask for is too much, too little, right on. And so I'm going to keep asking the question, even though it makes it a little uncomfortable and a little difficult. What's a strike zone going to be of what you, in your role at the commission, is going to define as an affordable price for energy? Again, we're going to see tension between what a utility may come, what they call an affordable price, and what low-income families in my mm-hmm. district and in districts across the state are going to consider an affordable price. Even just this year, we've had some rates proposed from Xcel, I know, made headlines about a nearly 10% rate increase. Made me wince right away just seeing the headline, because I know what that's going to do to local families in my district. So, talk about the strike zone that you're going to approach with affordability and what you would define as an affordable price, especially if you've got differing views between the consumers and the providers.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner, cost is a priority for the Senate Energy Committee. If I could only ask one question, I think that would be it. Your answer.
Great. Chair Frenz and Senator Matthews, thank you for the question. And I want to also say thank you to Senator Grünhagen for bringing this up initially. Affordability is not just a talking point for me. And like I said, I don't think about it in terms of statistics, although those can be very helpful for us to track affordability for people. I think about it in terms of the actual impacts on the families who are struggling to pay their utility bills. And I know that we've seen really striking increases in disconnections for Minnesota households and arrears over the last year. And I think that shows not only a strain on families because of their utility costs, but also that is just one cost among so many that are putting stress on families. The commission has an important role in mitigating increases in rates. And through rate cases, we can pull things out of rates and rate recovery. We can adjust the rate of return for utilities. But there are several things outside of our control, particularly the cost of fuels. So the cost of gas goes up. That's outside of the commission's control, and it's just a pass-through to the consumer straight from or through the utility. So one of the things, you know, first of all, I will absolutely be scrutinizing all rate increases and I will go through those with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that we are not approving any kind of recovery that's not appropriate and prudent. But on the other side of things, I do think that it's important for the commission, and I will increasingly focus on implementation of affordability programs. So whether that's the gas affordability program, Xcel's Power On program, the other many different programs that our utilities provide directly to their customers in need, I think we've seen varying success through different utilities. I think we see Minnesota Power has a really proactive approach to reaching out to customers before disconnection, before people get so behind on their bills, to connect them to services that they need up front. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to see all of our utilities doing. I think that it is a tragedy, and it is without question a trauma to every family who goes through a disconnection. Once you are disconnected and once you are behind on your bill, it is so incredibly difficult to dig out from there. And I am not unaware of the fact that by the time someone stops paying their utility bill, they have made every other sacrifice there is to make. I will take this very, very seriously, and I want to focus on low-income assistance programs. I want to focus on energy efficiency services for low-income people through ECO and ensuring that our utilities are coordinating and collaborating with our weatherization assistance program, with LIHEAP and federal resources, so that we are really increasing the services we provide for low-income people, because that is the best way and the most long-term way we can bring people's utility bills down and not get into this assistance cycle. But I also think immediate financial assistance is part of the package, and we need to do a much better job of ensuring proactive outreach and a little bit of hand-holding by our utilities to help people get the need or the things they need.
Senator Matthews, any follow-up?
No.
All right, we have Senator Dibble on the list, and now we'll add Senator Green to that list. Senator Dibble.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming forward, Commissioner Partridge. I wanted to first respond to my good friend, Senator Grünhagen. We usually don't respond to much of what he asserts, but I think it's important to just establish the fact that, just as an example, and I think it was referenced, the Xcel IRP that was approved just like a week ago or so. And if you read the details of that, Mr. Chair, you'll see that Xcel anticipates that the level of energy cost increases is going to come in below the rate of overall inflation at 1% or less per year, relying very heavily on wind as a resource as a part of that IRP, and coming in and meeting Senator Frenz, Mr. Chair, the goals of your bill to get us to a carbon-free energy system, at least from the Xcel IOU, by 2035, not 2040, at a lesser cost than we would have experienced otherwise. But what I wanted to ask you, Commissioner, is to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about conservation and efficiency. You come out of CEE, which has been a foremost leader on those policy issues and ideas. CEE was a big partner back in 2007 when we passed the Next Generation Energy Act, which had a big jump forward. I was the chief author of that bill, not the Next Generation Energy Act. That was Senator Prettner-Solem, but we rolled my bill into her bill. And then fast forward to 2021, and Senator Rarick was the chief author of the next iteration of incredible gains that we made around conservation and efficiency, making that part of the portfolio, if you will, the mix of, virtual sources of energy. So where do you see going forward conservation and efficiency initiatives playing a role in how we meet our energy needs on behalf of Minnesotans, how Minnesotans can bring their cost down, how we can bring the overall cost down to our energy system, and also get to that goal of carbon-free sources of energy, mm-hmm. either by or before 2040.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Commissioner Partridge.
Chair France and Senator Dibble, thank you for that question. Energy efficiency is an incredibly important resource, and I think it is really foundational to our energy system. It is one of the only clean energy resources that can immediately cut people's bills down. So it has these incredible benefits for participating customers, but it also then provides benefits to all ratepayers. So it's an important affordability resource, but also really an important clean energy resource, and has been for many, many years. I think going into the future, what we're seeing for energy efficiency is that it is also playing this really important role in enabling other technologies and in enabling new loads. So energy efficiency, I think of it as sort of a baseload power resource. We have this base of energy efficiency all of the time. We're bringing energy off of the system, and that is providing room for other loads to come on without building new expensive resources. It is also one of the cheapest resources we have, and so by doing that first, we are avoiding the most expensive resources further up that cost curve stack, whether that's on the electric side or the gas side. So I will be pushing the utilities to continue to make really aggressive investments in energy efficiency and to run good programs, because I think that's another thing that we really need to see is that we had sort of the low-hanging fruit everyone talks about. Maybe that was, the early 2008, 2009 era where we could do, efficient furnaces and some more efficient air conditioners and light bulbs. But now we need to do the really hard stuff, which is putting in insulation, doing deep energy retrofits, pairing those with extremely efficient heat pump technologies, getting all of those loads and all of that technology to work together through smart thermostats and other types of controls. And those are a little bit more difficult than just giving somebody a rebate for a light bulb. So I think what we need to do as a commission is work really closely with the Department of Commerce to make sure that we have utilities running those very high-value intensive programs so that we not only maintain that baseload but continue to grow that baseload resource of energy efficiency on our system.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Dibble, you're good? Okay, we'll go to Senator Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I wish you'd come to my office. I talked about you some of these things before, because I wasn't even going to ask any questions today. I was going to let other people do it. But some of the things you've said have really set off some red flags. And so one question I have is you talked about heat pumps, geothermal, and how that can bring down the cost. But the fact is heat pumps are not cheap. Mm-hmm. And for an existing home right now to put in a heat pump, the half-life of that heat pump, you'd be lucky to pay for it before it's done. And so that's one issue. And they also need backup, and they're not free. And people have this tendency to believe that if you have a heat pump or a geothermal unit, somehow your electricity bills are going away. And I can tell you that I have one, and they don't. And when the electricity rates go up, it's still very, very hard to do. And now you're dealing with that issue as well. And your solution, it seemed to me, was more assistance. So does the PUC have any kind of authority over housing assistance or energy assistance?
Commissioner Partridge.
Chair Friends, Senator Green, so the commission does have authority over utility assistance programs. We oversee programs like Power On, the Gas Affordability Program, but I do want to say that it was not my recommendation that we rely on assistance to help people implement unaffordable technologies. I did quite a bit of work in my previous job with the Center for Energy and Environment, modeling out the operational costs and understanding the upfront costs of implementing air source heat pumps, geothermal, which is far more expensive, I will tell you that, and even things like heat pump water heaters. So I know that they are not cheap, and I understand what you're saying there. They do have upfront costs. They are more expensive than your typical air conditioner or your typical gas furnace. But based on modeling that our research team did when I was at CEE, we found significant savings. It shifts a lot of the amount of money you would be paying to your gas utility away from the gas utility, and the amount that it increases your electric bill is less than the amount you save on the gas side. There are certainly limits to that, and we saw rates have an important impact on that, and so there are lots of utilities for kind of weedy reasons, because those loads are so much higher and because we use our rates to pay for fixed costs as well, we have an opportunity on the electric side to reduce the electric rate that customers pay when they have electric heating, because otherwise they'd be paying way more than their fair share for some of those fixed costs. So when we do that and we consider those loads and the added volumes, we're able to really take the rates down a little bit and make that more affordable for customers without impacting the other customers who don't have electric heat. So I do understand what you're saying. Those pieces of equipment are not cheap. I hope that over time, as the market takes off in Minnesota, we'll see those costs come down. I know there are lots of people, not least of whom CEE, doing a lot of work with contractors and distributors to make sure that we are implementing these technologies that have a lot of benefits for customers and are extremely efficient in a way that is cost-effective and low-cost. The one issue that we ran into is that actually places like Missouri had much stronger heat pump marketplaces because of the weather. And as that technology has advanced, so we now have cold climate heat pumps, Minnesota and other cold climate states are sort of catching up a little bit. So I think the costs are still a little high here.
Senator Green, any follow-up?
Oh, yes. Mr. Chair, I would dispute some of the things you said, but that's for another day maybe. But what I specifically asked as far as the assistance goes, money gets put into an account that goes out for energy assistance. And I don't think that you have the ability to appropriate that money that has to come from here. So if it is that... is that part of your plan to keep energy assistance affordable?
Mr. Partridge.
Chair Friends, Senator Green, I am not sure I understood the question. Can you?
Yeah.
Senator Green.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can. You, when you were talking about keeping energy affordable, and we'll talk about the bringing down rates in a minute, but you were talking about getting cut off their electric, their energy supply, mm-hmm. and that your solution would be, or part of the solution would be, energy assistance programs to help mm-hmm. them pay for that.
Yes.
And my those dollars, as I understand it, I don't think that the PUC has authority over those dollars. Maybe they do, but that money has to be appropriated through here. So is part of your keeping energy affordable, heating energy in this particular case, affordable, part of that plan to increase energy assistance programs?
Senator Green, maybe you're saying is part of her plan, if she's confirmed, to seek additional appropriations from the legislature for energy assistance, or
I guess that's the way to put it. But is the energy assistance a program part of her plan to keep energy affordable?
We could have the executive secretary come up, or commissioner, do you want to tackle
that's
that?
Great. Chair Friends, Senator Green, so it is my understanding, and I was trying to phone a friend here, but it's my understanding that the Public Utility Commission oversees the gas affordability program, which was created by the legislature, but we are the ones that oversee the budget for those programs and cost recovery through rates. I think there's another example of like the Power On program for Xcel Energy that it's not part of energy assistance or LIHEAP, that is part of the utilities bill assistance program. And I believe, again, that the Public Utility Commission oversees the budget and rate recovery for those. I also, while I don't like the idea of just increasing assistance programs, I think it is important that we provide immediate financial support to low-income families in need before disconnection. And I also would say that allowing for utilities to rack up bad debt and arrearage without providing that support up front is also not cheap, and we all end up paying for that as well. So I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly, but I think, in my personal opinion, giving people upfront support that they need when they need it, if they qualify, and like I said, I feel very strongly that every person who is facing disconnection has made every sacrifice they can before letting their lights and heat go out. So I think it's important to provide services and make those services available to those customers ahead of time.
Senator Green.
And I don't disagree that people need help with their heating system, but that wasn't the question. I think you answered the question, though, because you're going to have the responsibility of keeping this affordable and reliable. And part of that seems to be that you're going to be relying on energy assistance to do that. So that was the question, and I think that was the answer. And I just have one more question for you. You talked about lowering the rates. You have the ability to lower rates. But in my case, I have an electric co-op, and they pay X amount of dollars for their electricity. So if you're going to come in and lower the rates, you could essentially be telling my co-op that they can't do it. And so as much as I'd like to see lower rates, I do know that in our instance, they're at the mercy of who's ever supplying that electricity. And when the 2040 plan kicks in completely, even now it's hurting us, those energy costs are going to go up. So at some point, what is the, hopefully there's a plan moving forward to keep that affordable and still be able to keep the co-ops and other electrical suppliers or electricity suppliers in business. And we're only talking electricity here. We're not talking the other energy costs that are going to be affected by this. And it's already devastating to some people, and it's going to get worse. And so this affordable and reliable question is first and foremost.
Thank you, Senator Green. Commissioner Partridge, any response?
Yeah, Chair Frentz and Senator Green, thank you so much for that question. And I may have spoken ineloquently or not as specifically as I should have, but the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission does not regulate the rates of consumer-owned utilities, only of investor-owned utilities. So just a point of clarification, we will not be influencing the rates that your co-op charges you. I think you all know this, Chair Frentz, you know this very well, that there are several dockets open regarding implementation of the 100% bill. One of those pertains to what are called the modifications and delay of standard. Affordability is one of those. And so the law, in my mind, has a great deal of flexibility and recognizes that affordability is very, very important. And if we see a point where a utility is not able to meet their standard through 100% bill on time without having a negative impact on affordability, we can make a decision to delay their standard. We'll figure out what that looks like through this implementation docket, but I think I would also say to Senator Dibble's point, what we saw in the case of the most recent rate case IRP from Xcel Energy that, and my first and only docket so far as a commissioner, was pretty positive in terms of the expected rate increase and in terms of their ability to meet the carbon-free standard ahead of schedule. So that's my only reference point at this moment, but I will be looking for any concerns around affordability going forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Green, you're good?
For now, unless another question pops up that sparked my interest.
Thank you, Senator Green. I thought we would be moving on, but now I see Senator McEwen on the list. Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much, Chair, friends. I will be very quick. I know that we've been at this a little while here. Thank you very much for joining us today, and I'm excited about a lot of the things that you're talking about and feel very encouraged by some of the initiatives that also I'm reading about in letters of support for you, so very appreciative of those. My question just pertains real quick, because I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up, especially in this type of forum. I think it doesn't get brought up enough. What I hear a lot about in my district and from Minnesotans in my office are concern about the disparity between executive pay at our investor-owned utilities, and especially that comes into stark relief when they come to the PUC and they're asking for rate increases, and that really starts to rankle people, understandably. You know, I just looked it up, and I'm seeing, you know, CenterPoint CEO made $37.8 million, Excel CEO in compensation over $21 million, our own elite CEO with Minnesota Power up north in Duluth coming in at a modest just shy of $3.5 million. I just want to get your feedback on your approach to that very real, very destabilizing, I think, for our economy and for our systems here in the state of Minnesota. How do you approach that as a commissioner, and sort of what is your philosophy around that? Thanks.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. Commissioner.
Chair Friends, Senator McEwen, thank you so much for that question. That is an excellent question. I too am very disturbed by the numbers that you just read off, and I think that especially as we're seeing costs increasingly stressing so many families across the state, to see an executive paid $37 million is extremely troubling, and it is a very bad look. And so I will be scrutinizing all of those through rate cases. I know that the commission prior to my joining limited executive comp in a rate case, and I think that came back to us on an appeal. And so I will be looking to staff, other commissioners, and the executive secretary for guidance on how and what role we can play in pushing on executive compensation. But I think your point is very important.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Senator. Seeing no further questions, thank you, members. To be continued on our cost discussion. To Senator Dibble's point, Senator Grunhagen, just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page. Xcel Energy brought their case through. The decision was that, keeping affordability in mind, that the plan was ultimately approved with less than a rate hike that Xcel wanted, but I did not think that was the big story. The big story is an investor-owned utility said, in order to serve our customers at the rates that we think are fair, we will still meet our carbon-free goals by 2035. This is a company whose duty is to serve its shareholders, and so into that, I think the PUC's work will keep in mind that our goal is to be clean, affordable, and reliable. With that, members, in consultation with Senator Matthews, we're gonna do a voice vote on the recommendation. That's still okay, Senator Matthews? And therefore, Senator Zhang moves that the committee recommend to the Senate the confirmation of Audrey Partridge for Commissioner of the Public Utilities Commission. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the commission will, the recommendation is to send it to the full Senate with our recommendation as the Senate Energy Committee. Thank you for your time here, Commissioner, and looking forward to seeing you on the floor of the Senate.
Thank you.
Members, we're now going to move to Commissioner Huy Quan Ham. Commissioner Ham, if you'll come forward, please. Thank you for your patience. I know that you have been before the committee and most, but not all, of the members before. Could you start, please, by introducing yourself, and if you don't mind, revisiting some of the basic testimony that you gave previously. Commissioner Hom.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Friends, Vice Chair Zhang, Senator Matthews, and distinguished member of the committee. My name is Hui Kwan Hom. I stand before you today humbled and honored by your consideration for my confirmation to the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. On January 3, 2024, Governor Walz announced my appointment to the Public Utilities Commission. The appointment runs through January 3, 2028. I previously came before the committee last session and was recommended for confirmation on February 14, 2024. However, the 2024 session adjourned before the full Senate could take up my confirmation. I really appreciate your prior support of my confirmation and ask for your support again here today. To be respectful for your time, I shortened my statement from last year, but want to spend a couple of minutes reintroducing myself to you. As you know, the PUC is Minnesota's oldest regulatory body and oversees the state's investor-owned utility, including electric, gas, and landline telecommunication providers. The decision we make impact the lives of Minnesotans in various variety of ways. I recognize the importance of these decisions and do my work according to the mandates laid out in Minnesota statute. On a weekly basis, we deliberate over a range of proceedings about utility service quality, rates, and long-term plans. Since I started my term last session, we have addressed many important issues, including but not limited to approving the state's first ever natural gas innovation plan, approving energy infrastructure and transmission line permits, including being the first state in the MISO footprint to approve MISO Tranche 1 project, mitigating impact from the rate change petition and approving integrated resource plan, to name just a few. Prior to my PUC appointment, I spent 20 years working as a public employee serving Minnesotans. During this time, I worked on a range of energy issues to protect ratepayers and promote Minnesota's interest in federal and regional markets. I'm an economist by trade, and my expertise lies in ensuring reliability, fostering efficient energy markets, guiding transmission planning, and advocating for equitable transmission cost allocation. I was born and raised in Seoul, Republic of Korea. I came to the United States when I was almost 19 in 1983. When I came to the United States, I barely spoke and understood English. So first 2.5 years, I learned English while I was earning academic credits in community college to transfer to four-year college. After I transferred to University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, I earned BA in economics. In 1989, I came to Minnesota to study economics at University of Minnesota. I have an MA degree in economics from University of Minnesota. I live in Woodbury with my wife over 30 years, Sunyoung Lee, and our two daughters. Sunyoung is currently volunteering as a math tutor at the St. Paul School District, helping adults with limited English proficiency master mathematical concepts. Dasom Ham, my oldest daughter, is pursuing her doctoral degree in economics at University of Michigan after graduating from University of Minnesota with economics degree. My younger daughter, Aram Ham, is studying at the University of Minnesota for undergraduate degree in environmental science, policy, and management. I firmly believe that I possess the expertise and experience to be an independent voice on Public Utilities Commission, delivering timely and fair outcome for all Minnesotans. Once again, I'm humbled and honored by your consideration for confirmation to Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. I'm available to answer any question you might have. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll go to member questions now. Member questions now. Senator Grunhagen. Senator.
I do wait for other people to raise their hand, but nobody does, so. Well, thanks for your testimony. And, you know, I'm a strong supporter of legal immigration, so thanks for coming for this country. Thanks for participating and trying to make it a better place. And so you're welcome, okay? My great-great-grandparents came over as immigrants, too. We had the same, we come from the same path. We're a land of immigrants, by the way. Anyway, thanks for your testimony. I won't ask you the same questions that I did the previous testifier, but I will ask a couple new ones. You know, one of the things that has really been concerning to me for a long time is, and as far as I know, we don't have any way to address it, is when these solar gardens and these windmills are gonna have to be cleaned up. We don't have a, you know, with a landfill, a certain amount of your charge for landfilling is put into a fund to clean it up later on, okay? But with these windmills and solar, there's no money being set aside, which tells me that when they go kaput, and I've got people I know where they have gone kaput, it's gonna fall on the ratepayers to clean up this mess. And the people who are making money off this, most of them are gonna be in an LLC or something similar. They're gonna pull the money out and they're gonna be long gone when it's time to pick up the pieces of this, I don't wanna call it a scam, but this less than effective way of providing electricity. So in your capacity, as I asked the previous testifier, I would appreciate that you would bring to our attention concerns that you see going forward, such as cleaning this mess up, windmills and solar, on how to address that so we don't artificially drive up the rates of ratepayers to clean the mess up when the people who made the money, they're gonna be long gone, okay? Any thoughts?
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Friends and Senator Grunhagen. As far as I understand, Minnesota Commission is issuing a permit whenever they build these power plant, we are issuing permits. Standard condition is they have to establish the commissioning funding. So it is, I think, upfront, we are requiring them to prepare for the commissioning of those power plants.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, well, you're the first one. Every time I ask that question, I'm told, well, there's no plan, but you're saying there is a plan. There must be a fund somewhere that I'm not aware of, or a lot of people aren't aware of, because whenever I ask this, they say, well, there's no money being set aside. So are you sure there's this fund someplace to clean this mess up later on?
Senator Grunhagen, just to clarify, are you asking when the PUC approves the construction of a new power plant, do they plan for the decommissioning? I think the testimony is that they do. I wondered whether you were on a different question, which is turbines disposal and whether that for
an independent turbines purpose. And solar gardens. That's what I'm specific. I know on the other things
okay. We
have a decommissioning, but I'm specifically wondering about turbines and solar gardens.
All right.
Because so far I've always gotten no.
Thank
as
you,
a
Senator.
Response.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner, does that question make sense? Okay, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Friends and Senator Grunhagen. As I mentioned that, yes, we are setting that condition. I think it's very important to enforce that. I hope that we can work with the Office of Attorney General and other state agencies to make sure that we are enforcing that permit condition.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for that. Hey, if you find that fund, let me know. I'd like to know what's in there, okay? I haven't been able to find it in the last several years. Next question is, Mr. Chair, you know, a couple years ago when I was serving in the other body, one of the lead lobbyists for energy gave us a graph of the cost of solar gardens and where the money's going in the state of Minnesota. Now, it's a couple years old, but I took a colored picture of it, along with his picture on it, of the rates. And what I found was that the solar garden rate at that time was supposed to be about 4 cents a kilowatt hour, and yet the state was artificially inflating it to 12 cents a kilowatt hour at that time, okay? I think we tried to address that last session a little bit, but I don't know how successful we were. But anyway, according to that graph, 13%, this is from the lead lobbyist on energy here in the state of Minnesota, a lot of experience. I think he's retiring next year. Anyway, I won't say his name, but I do have his height and weight, though. No, okay, that's enough. But according to the graph, 13% of solar gardens in the state of Minnesota were owned by Minnesota corporations and individuals, 13%. 62% of the solar gardens in the state of Minnesota, according to that graph, and again, these numbers are fluid, were owned by corporations and individuals outside the state of Minnesota. In fact, Warren Buffett owns a lot of our solar gardens, and I'm sure he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart. He's a billionaire. Anyway, and 20%, according to that graph that we are showing, of our solar gardens in the state of Minnesota were owned by foreign corporations and individuals. I want you to think about that. So we're artificially inflating the price of electricity coming from our solar gardens, and so we're fleecing our businesses, our farms, and our citizens, low income and otherwise, and we're sending 87% of it outside the state of Minnesota and 20% of it to foreigners. That is a travesty. There should be a law against that. And I tried to pass one. Of course, it got blocked. But when you approve these, will you make sure that at least people in the state of Minnesota own these solar gardens? That's my question.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. I believe that would be a legislative prerogative, but I'm going to allow the commissioner to address your question anyway. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Friends and Senator Grunhagen. Thanks for your insight on those information. I'll be very mindful, but as I think already discussed, we just take the policy made by a legislative body and we have to work within that framework. But I'll be very mindful about what you just told us.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Just a comment.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, just a brief comment. I guess what I'm talking about is, like I addressed with the previous testifier, in your capacity, and I believe you're going to be approved with or without my vote, and I won't, I'll surprise you. No, in your capacity, come back to this committee and tell us the ripple effect of what we're doing. That's what I want, okay? Because I'm seeing the ripples, and it's going the wrong direction as far as I'm concerned, okay? So appreciate if you would do that. Again, I commend you for coming over here from Korea and accomplishing what you have. Welcome to Minnesota. We need legal immigration. And you've done a great job. But I have a lot of concerns in those areas. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. And you have my pledge as chair that if you want to bring testimony forward comparing the rise in energy prices to the overall inflation rate, this committee would be happy to hear more about that, as we have had testimony suggesting that they're similar, but welcome any information you want to bring forward on costs. Member, seeing no other hands raised, again, in consultation with Senator Matthews, we're going to take a voice vote. Senator Dibble moves the committee that we recommend to the full Senate the confirmation of Huiquan Hom for Commissioner of the Public Utilities Commission. All those in favor of Senator Dibble's motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion carries and it is adopted. Thank you very much for your time, Commissioner. We'll see you in the full Senate.
Thank you.
Members, that's the full agenda that we have today. Thank you for your patience. A couple things to throw out there. Senator Matthews and I are talking about meeting with our House counterparts, hopefully in the next week or two. We'll set an agenda. The budget forecast will be out on the 6th. We'll have a little bit more to talk about with targets. And renewable development account week. We sort of anticipate Mr. Klein here will be talking about bills we want to bring forward. Hopefully there'll be some bipartisan chatter. And with that, the committee is adjourned.